Voters will now decide a stack of proposed changes to the state constitution.
How one big school district could put more people with guns in schools to protect students.
And the race to be the state's next governor picks up speed.
This is the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition this hour from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Well, more than a dozen proposed changes to the Florida Constitution are going on the fall ballot. But several issues are packed into each question for voters to decide. Duval County schools may hire and arm dozens of school safety assistants, not full-fledged police, in a compromise to boost school safety.
We'll also talk about the governor's race that continues to take shape in Florida. You can join the conversation 305-995-1800 on the Florida Roundup statewide edition with your phone calls after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition here. We're going to start the statewide edition here with the Florida Constitution Revision Commission. It has finished its work. It's a 37-member panel. It meets every two decades to consider changes to the state constitution. Now, last Monday, the group approved eight proposed constitutional amendments for voters to consider in November. They'll join five other amendments that have been put forward by the legislature or by citizen initiatives. Most of the CRC's final proposals have several ideas, though, grouped together into a single amendment. One such plan, for instance, bundles term limits for school board members with civic literacy and charter school oversight, all together in one idea. Several CRC members tried to stop this grouping of proposals strategy. Former Democratic State Senator Arthena Joyner thinks voters will be turned off by the move.
If they sincerely believe in something and you put them together, people are going to go negative and vote it down. And then the good goes down with the bad.
Now, all the proposed amendments, Melissa, must be approved by more than 60% of Florida voters in order to take effect. And we've got a group of wonderful reporters to talk about this, as well as your phone calls at 305-995-1800.
Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup. As we talk about the Constitution Revision Commission, controversially, they are bundling together several proposals into one for voters to approve. And that is where the complaints are coming in from around the state.
Yep.
Now, of course, these ballot amendments, Tom, have to be approved by more than 60% of Florida voters to make the change to the Constitution. Joining us now with their thoughts on all this, we welcome Steve Bosquet. He's Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the Tampa Bay Times. Lloyd Dunkelberger is a reporter with the News Service of Florida. And give us a call here on the Florida Roundup. What do you think about this move to bundle together proposals for the state constitution, particularly around education? 305-995-1800. Join the show now. Steve Bosquet, let's start with you. Let's break down these proposals that have been bundled together. It can be a little confusing for people that haven't followed the process closely, right?
Absolutely. This has been done before. It's going to confuse voters. It's going to really antagonize voters when they start reading the fine print here. I'll just take one proposal that there's going to be a lot of discussion about and probably a lot of political support for, and that is the fourth proposal of the eight that the CRC agreed to will put in the Constitution a prohibition on offshore oil and natural gas exploration and will prohibit vaping e-cigarettes, mm-hmm. right, in enclosed workplaces, including restaurants. Well, I mean, every poll you've ever seen, the support for offshore drilling ban in this state is off the charts with 1,500 miles of coastline. But why does a vaping ban belong in the same question? Voters have to vote up or down on the whole thing.
Yeah, and is that seen as a less than transparent way of getting measures through the process?
Absolutely. I think this CRC was pretty disappointing, this body of work. I mean, they held hearings around the state, and going back a year, they held a lot of public hearings, and they heard from people who want to have a discussion, a meaningful discussion in this state about capital punishment, about substantive tax reform, about gun violence. None of that stuff is in any of these questions.
So Lloyd Dunkelberger with the News Service of Florida, this bundling strategy, is it essentially assured mutual destruction of these proposals? I mean, if you've got oil drilling and vaping together and it's kind of all passes or all fails.
Well, it's a risk. But if you look at what happened in 98, they bundled and eight of the nine passed. So
it's worked in the past.
Yeah, it's worked in the past. And I could actually read you one, but we probably don't have enough time. but 78, they bundled and they all failed. So
history may not be so much of a guidance here going forward.
No, and let me give you one here that because of the unfortunate events at Gilchrist County yesterday, it'll be Amendment 7 on the ballot, but it combines death benefits for first responders like sheriff's deputies are killed in the line of duty with some provisions giving constitutional authority to the state college system.
Let me just ask, this idea to put together these three proposals into one, it's term limits for school board members. That's popular.
Right.
Civic literacy, popular. And then the controversial measure slipped in there having to do with charter school oversight. Can you explain that a little more fully? Because that's the one that seems to be getting the most discussion around Florida right now.
Two of those came from Erica Donnells, Collier County School Board member. She would argue that they are all related to the public school system. The critics would call it log rolling. You put in the popular issues with the unpopular one.
Why would the issue involving charter schools be unpopular? Let's explain what it would do.
I mean, actually, the word charter schools is not in the proposal. Basically, it gives the state it would set up a system where the state could authorize schools, including charter schools, in a county over, you know, rather than have the school board do it. But it does touch on the charter school debate, which is ongoing throughout the state with the public schools versus the charters. And you heard it. If you listened to the gubernatorial debate among the Democrats this week, it was a big issue for them. They're pretty much unanimous in the opposing charter schools.
The other point here is that it's going to be controversial because this is going to mobilize the Florida Education Association. Agreed, Lloyd?
Yes.
Which is the teacher union, which is a bulwark of the Democratic Party in a big, big election year.
I'll touch on another one that's bundled. It's certainly a concern to the counties, and this would affect the charter counties. Miami-Dade would be a big one. In fact, you could end up with an elected sheriff down there, which you hadn't had in a number of years. And it's bundled with provisions that have to do with the Department of Veterans Affairs, popular, Office of Counterterrorism, popular. Mm-hmm. And it has a kind of a technical provision letting the legislature meet in January. So,
Steve Buske, let me just ask you back to this strategy of this bundling. And we've got a lot of phone calls here coming in. You can join us 305-995-1800. Florida, shall we say, has a mixed record of having crystal clear and concise voting ballots for constituents to make decisions. What is this physically going to look like? What is this actually going to look like, either on the voting screen or a paper ballot?
It's going to look like a very shorthand version of what I've got in front of me. There's a very comprehensive article, and it's online, in today's Tallahassee Democrat about all of the eight proposals. I have a lot of confidence that the newspapers in the state are going to cover these things thoroughly, and interest groups are going to make sure they're being discussed and debated. But there's a 75-word limit on the questions.
Right.
And they're going to appear at the bottom of your ballot. You're going to be hearing from election supervisors who are going to be encouraging more and more people to vote by mail than ever before for two reasons. So they can read these proposals and read those 75 words and also not cause incredibly long lines at polling places when they're reading there.
Well, and here's an interesting side note. If you go back to the 2012 election, the legislature put 11 ballot proposals on the ballot, but the legislature is not restricted to 75 words, and some of those were really long that we ended up with a lot of lines there, and all those amendments failed that year. So,
How high is the bar to get these through, given that these are complex, perhaps difficult to understand? Well, I mean, they have to get 60% approval.
Exactly. And these will be the first CRC amendments to have to reach that 60% level. And if you look back, I look back in the last 20 years, almost invariably, amendments fail on the ballot. There was exceptions in 2006 and 2004. But
305-995-1800 is the phone number, talking about the Constitution Revision Commission and the ballot referenda that is going to be on your ballot in the fall here in the Sunshine State, and the bundling of those questions together, multiple questions per referenda here. Let's go to Linda in Hollywood in Broward County. Linda, you are on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes, I am very opposed to the bundling of issues, especially in constitutional amendments. If the legislature was doing its job as it should be, these things should be passed into law by the legislature. We shouldn't be constantly amending the Constitution of the state of Florida. If it's done by law, if it doesn't work out well, the law can be changed. It's very difficult to change Constitution once you've made an amendment to it.
Linda, we got to let's pick it up there with Steve and Lloyd. How about that? I mean, we hear this consistently with the constituent-driven ballot referenda, let alone the Constitutional Revision Commission.
Right. The caller is absolutely right, in my judgment. We're dealing with a different set of standards here. The Supreme Court has a single subject rule for constitutional amendments that are ballot initiatives or stuff proposed by the legislature. Now, keep in mind, there are going to be legal challenges here filed in the Supreme Court against some of these amendments. We've heard from the oil industry, for example. They don't like the offshore drilling ban.
Yeah.
The greyhound racing industry doesn't like a ban on greyhound racing. They've got every right to march into the Florida Supreme Court. And so we'll see what the Supreme Court does. But I think the Supreme Court justices are going to say, hey, the CRC is not bound by the single subject rule. They can do this.
The former Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court, Major Harding, has penned an op-ed about this. And he pointed out that the reason that other than through this commission, single subject requirements that come to the amendments that come to the voters legally had to be limited to a single subject so as to prevent what we're seeing happening right now. Were there any indications, guys, when the CRC was going around the state and conducting all of these public hearings and gathering information for this amendment process that you might have seen that their work product at the end might be put together in this way? Or was this a surprise to those who'd been?
No, it wasn't a surprise because it was in the rules and like it's been used by the two prior commissions. It's probably something that, you know, if we can think that far ahead to 2038, the next CRC, then maybe we ought to make some changes.
Only 20 more years.
Only 20 more. And I'm not covering that. I'll say that right now.
Steve, can we mark you down for that one?
Pencil me in.
Okay, I'll pencil you in.
But let me get back to your caller's point about, you know, why doesn't the legislature do this? One of the reasons sometimes there's an amendment to the Constitution because the legislature won't do something.
Right.
And one of those proposals here is it's a single subject ethics proposal, which would increase ethics standards, which the legislature usually balks at. So sometimes there's a positive, but that's a single subject issue there.
We've got some more phone calls here, guys, we want to get to 305-995-1800 across the Sunshine State. We will go to the Gulf Coast next. Mike in Fort Myers has been holding on patiently. Mike, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Thank you kindly. I have read all eight of the amendments proposed by the commission, and it seems to me that they are looking for one of two outcomes. Either they have bundled things together, which seem perfectly reasonable, and then they throw in a red herring that's bound to doom it, or reverse, they are trying to put so many good things together and then drag something that makes no sense but is on their agenda. Either way, bundling is a totally wrong idea.
Mike, we appreciate the thoughts there from Fort Myer. Let's go to Miami, where Mario has been holding on line three. Mario, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you doing? I won't put it so candidly. This is sort of politician's corruption. I mean, there's no reason. Every subject, when you're amending the Constitution, should be separate. Completely separate. One thing doesn't have to do with the other when you are making a decision of that level. So I'm disgusted. I mean, I don't know how far we're going to get on how politicians behave. And I'm listening to the radio and no one says anything about that. It's like 2 years ago with FPL and the solar power, which they tried to mislead the whole public. Related to solar power.
Yeah, it was two separate solar amendments there, one backed by the electric industry here. 305-995-1800.
Those were seen as somewhat misleading. Yeah.
Right. Is there a limit, Steve or Lloyd, to the number of proposed amendments that the CRC can propose or can put on a ballot? Is that one of the strategies behind this bundling that they've done?
No, there's no legal limit. What there is, there's a common sense limit. Now, there are already five proposals on the ballot put there by the ballot by the citizens of the state or by the legislature. I think the most noteworthy of which, or the most publicized of which, is Amendment 4, which would automatically restore the right to vote to most convicted felons.
Mm-hmm.
So The first CRC proposal is number six.
Right.
Number six is the first CRC proposal. And supervisors of election who are very vocal and very independent and I think very public-spirited about democracy have been warning the CRC, don't overload the wagon. And so now we've got 13 proposals. And keep in mind that if you live in Key Biscayne or Weston or West Palm Beach, you're going to have county and city ballot questions after the state constitutional amendments. This isn't the end of the ballot. There's more stuff after this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And Lloyd Dunkelberger, what about what Steve said a moment ago, that we're sure to see legal challenges to how this process is being executed? Can you share a little bit more about what we can anticipate to see there?
Well, they'll try to challenge the ballot summary and language as misleading, but actually, the CRC's met twice before. They've never had one knocked off. And frankly, they had a pretty high-powered legal team, including Barry Richards and Judge Altenburn, I believe his name is, out of Tampa, former well-respected DCA judge who vetted all the language. So it's possible. You never know what the courts are going to do. But
305-995-1800. A few more phone calls here. Jim in Jacksonville on line four. Go ahead, Jim. You're on the radio.
Hi, good afternoon. What Mike spoke of just a few callers ago is the root, but here's the answer. Isn't it all about money and politics? And, you know, the Constitution of the United States discusses what a person is. Well, as long as Citizens United says corporations have rights, well, corporations and their money are going to win every time. So we talk about agendas. It's all about big money. If we can't get rid of money in politics, it's all moot.
All right, Jim.
That's it.
Thanks for that phone call. 305-995-1800, talking about the bundling and the constitutional amendment questions that will be on the ballot here in the state of Florida. Steve, to your point, there's 14 that we know of now, the eight from the CRC, the five from citizens groups. But this could stretch into a couple of dozen by the time you get county and local municipal governments involved.
It could. There's a longstanding truism about politics in Florida. I'm sure in most states there's a drop-off factor. That is, as you go down the ballot, the number of ballots cast in a race declines. It's called voter fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people come to vote and they've left their they've left their dog in the car, or they've got to get to Publix, they've got to do something else, they've got to get back to work. And people allow a certain amount of time to vote if they're not voting by mail. This does that's a conversation for another day, Tom, about the pros
yes,
and cons of voting by mail.
Yes,
but this will I think this overloaded ballot with the cabinet, the governor, the U.S. Senate, the legislature, the judges, county commissioners, this is going to provide a strong argument for more people to vote by mail this time.
Lots of voting, lots to get before we even get to November. Steve Bosquet with the Tampa Bay Times Tallahassee Bureau Chief with us, and Lloyd Dunkelberger is along with us as well with the News Service of Florida, both of them joining from our sister station in the capital city, WFSU. Steve and Lloyd, thanks so much for your time today as we try to unbundle some of the bundling that's happened on the ballot, and we'll try to untie that certainly in the weeks to come as well. We've got lots more to come on our statewide edition here at the Florida Roundup. Stick with us, 305-995-1800, the statewide phone number. Your calls and more conversation coming up next.
Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We've got a lot of good conversation still to come here, Melissa. The deadly shooting at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland back in February, that, of course, led to a huge gun bill here in Florida that was named after the school. And one of the provisions in that law requires all public schools in Florida to have either a campus police officer or a school employee trained to carry a gun.
That's right, Tom. Now, the Duval County School Board quickly passed a resolution against arming school employees. So did the Broward County School Board. That's where Stoneman Douglas High School is actually located. But the Duval Schools Police Chief Michael Edwards told the board in Jacksonville this week that it would be too expensive, he said, to hire another 103 sworn officers. Instead, Edwards proposed that the district hire what he called school safety assistants. Now, they would be trained and work under his department, and they would have no other job duties at the schools. Several board members have said they'd be comfortable with this compromise, including Duval County School Board member Paula Wright. She's here in studio along with our own reporter, Lindsay Kilbride, who's been covering this. We want your calls on this National School Walkout Day as kids are around the country making a statement about school violence. Give us a call at 305-995-1800. Paula Wright, let's begin with you. This seems like a compromise proposal for the Duval County Public Schools.
Well, thank you for having me. And we feel that based upon having to comply with the law and based upon the amount of money that the state provided, this is the best possible solution at this time.
And do you think that this is going to provide a safe campus environment for students?
Well, I don't think anybody can say it's going to provide a safe campus, but I think that it will provide more opportunities for the safe school assistants that we plan to hire to have one at each of our elementary schools. It will meet the goal of making certain that we're going to be as preventive as possible.
Lindsay Kilbride, any chance other districts around the state might follow Duval County's lead, compromise path?
That is what Chief Edwards said will probably happen. I know personally I've had some people reach out to me asking, you know, for more information from other cities about what's going on and how they're going to be doing this. Basically, cities and school districts are figuring out how are they going to do this. Although it is an optional system to have, it's called the Guardian Program. And what that requires is a certain amount of training. It also requires, the person has to have a carry weapon permit, has to go through drug screenings, has to have a psychological evaluation. And then training is broken down. It's 132 hours of firearm safety and proficiency training. That's broken down into different areas, including defensive tactics and active shooter or assailant scenarios. And then, you know, there's 12 hours of diversity training. Duval's would have all of that in it. It'd be a little bit more training, 160 hours. But the guardians are not law enforcement officers. They can't make arrests. They can't Baker Act a student, things like that. So the thing is that although this Guardian program is, it's completely up to the school boards if they want to do it. A lot of school districts don't have the money to do it. So how are they going to do it? Are they going to hire, you know, retired police officers? If so, what are their city laws regarding pensions and things like that? How are they going to make that work if they're not already utilizing retired officers in their schools?
Lindsay, what led to this compromise? There's been a lot of talk about whether or not to arm school personnel, but this compromise is unique in it being the first. What was the walk up to it?
Well, it's really just around funding. Chief Edwards from the Duval County Schools Police Department basically laid out a bunch of different scenarios. So the district is going to have $3.6 million to fill in the rest of these 103 schools. So Duval County already has officers who are sworn officers at their middle schools and high schools. It's the elementary schools and some other schools. So basically, it would cost more than $10 million to do a sworn officer at the elementary schools. So then he laid out different options. So do we have some sworn officers at the bigger elementary schools and then some of these guardians at the smaller ones? And really, with $3.6 million, the only option that seemed feasible at the meeting, of course, Board Chair Paula Wright will tell you, they haven't voted on this yet, so they do need to have a vote.
And are
on
the
vote,
by the way, Paula Wright, are the votes there to pass this?
I have no idea. I don't think I can tell you that at our meeting, most of the members were complimentary of the process. And also, this is about also complying with the law. We didn't decide to just create this program. We are created a program utilizing the dollars given to comply with the law. And also another part of the process is that the Sheriff Williams of Jacksonville Sheriff's Office had to agree to this, support this, because the sheriff has to establish this program.
And even with this program, the district is still going to have to pay an additional $800,000 to fill in the gap. So it's really $4.4 million is what the chief said this would cost to have all the, so the district's going to be paying for the equipment. They're also going to be wearing uniforms. So instead of like the Guardian program traditionally would be, you know, a cafeteria worker or maybe a coach, you know, just at their normal job, this would be someone at the school called a school safety assistant who he said maybe the uniform would be a brown color. They would have a bulletproof vest and a gun. So they'd sort of be in a uniform. It wouldn't be exactly like a police officer's uniform, but it would be different than someone who's already employed at the school in some other capacity.
This idea of school safety assistance now in response to the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas law that requires armed police officer or an armed school personnel at public schools in the state of Florida. The Duval Public County School System talking about school safety assistance. Your thoughts here. School safety on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Let's go to another school board member. Robin Bartleman is a school board member in Broward County. Robin, have you heard about this idea, this compromise of sorts that the Duval County School Board is discussing, this idea of a school safety assistant, not a fully deputized law enforcement officer, but not a school personnel member who would be armed in order to comply with this law?
I have. Our board, though, recently passed, we decided that we feel that only sworn law enforcement officers should be allowed to carry firearms in our school.
So I know that
we feel very strongly that we don't think more guns is the solution, and that the gun needs to be in a sworn law enforcement's hand. I mean, I was just listening about the 160 hours of training. Jacksonville Sheriff's officer has to have more than 1,000 hours of training before even stepping foot in a police car, and we're going to work to find a way to get SROs in every school. That's our plan.
School resource officers. So, yes. Robin, you can state, at least as a member of the Broward County School District, the school district which experienced the Parkland tragedy, that this compromise that Duval is discussing is not something under consideration in Broward County, this idea of school security officer, not the case for you.
No, we feel very strongly that it should be a sworn law enforcement officer. If we recently just had a teacher that had a concealed carry permit that left their gun in a bathroom.
That's right, yeah.
We've seen across the country accidents with guns. It's just, in my opinion, it's just not a good formula to have someone with only 160 hours of training, especially in a high school. Will there be implicit bias training? All those things that come along with a sworn law enforcement officer. The National Association of School Resource Officers also recommends only arming school resource officers.
I understand
the issue. It's a money issue, and we're very concerned about the money.
Yeah.
And, we do use retired law enforcement officers in many of our schools.
Let me put some of your concerns about training to Paula Wright, the member of the Duval County Public School Board, who is with us in Jacksonville. Do you share those concerns, Paula, about training and the lower threshold of training that your compromise may allow?
Well, while we certainly respect whatever decision Broward or any other county will decide for their district, for our district, we have decided to go with the school safety assistant. And the main responsibilities of these persons will be to use whatever force is necessary to prevent or abate an active assailant incident, and to conduct perimeter and inner school checks to ensure the premises are secure. So no, we do not feel we are putting our students at risk.
But let me ask you then, with only 144 hours of training, mm-hmm. as opposed to a police officer's nearly 1,000 before they let the officers have weapons and interact with the public, is 100 and some hours of training sufficient for adults with weapons to be patrolling school grounds in the event of an active shooter situation? Does that up the potential for an accident, a misfiring, some other unforeseen consequence?
Well, certainly I wish if I could tell you that I could answer a lot of other questions. But we feel that because the safety school assistants will be primarily concerned with monitoring and patrolling our perimeter, we're taking greater stance to ensure that as soon as we suspect someone is doing something nefarious, we have somebody that can react to that, because they will also have radios that they can call for more help. And so, no, we are not putting our children at risk. If in terms of the SROs, We also looked at providing regional kinds of control in terms of having ASRO monitor 4, 5, 6, or maybe 10 schools. And we don't feel that is sufficient. But the sooner we can have someone to abate and assail it, an assailant incident, the safer our schools are. And there are different ways to do this. Whichever way Broward or any other county, so that's up to them. But I can say that Polk County is doing the exact same program we're doing. And it was the Polk County Sheriffs that came up with the initial Guardian plan. So each district has an opportunity to do what's best. Just like we talk about a holistic approach to education for our children and diversity based upon the needs. We're looking at our needs. I don't know what's in
local
terms of
control.
Local. We're looking at what would best suit Duval, and we're not going to be critical or talk about how many hours the additional training other officers would have in any other district.
Let's get some phone calls in here. 305-995-1800 statewide, talking about school safety and different proposals different school districts are using to meet the requirement of armed personnel at public schools in Florida in the wake of the Parkland tragedy. We will begin in Broward County. Bob is in Cooper City. Bob, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio now.
Hi, how you doing? I just had a comment to the speakers here, and my comment is that adding the special officers with the training and stuff to a school seems like a monumental waste of money when they dropped nurses from schools years ago. I would much rather see them reinstitute the nursing program at schools, at elementary schools, middle schools, where they would be used every single day of the year. Whereas opposed to these officers that they're going to train, spend money on training and put them in a school, as horrible as these incidents have been around our country, the chances of them ever being used are like infinitesimal. And
you certainly hope so. Bob, I think I got it. And I want to put that to Robin Bartleman, a member of the Broward County Public School Board. Robin, I think kind of in response to Bob, you've got a state mandate to put these armed personnel at public schools,
right?
Not nurses.
Well, we have an SRO mandate, and I have to tell you, I feel for Duval County and all of the counties in Florida because we are not funded where we need at the funding levels we need to be to provide all the services to our students, whether it be mental health, counseling, school nurses, security, SROs. We're starting this year in a funding deficit because of this budget. So what really needs to happen is the state of Florida needs to invest in the public schools so we don't have to come up with, like, clearly Duval, I respect, they're doing what's best for them and what they need to do.
What's it going to cost you, Robin, to put fully deputized law enforcement officers at all public schools in Broward County?
For all agencies, it's going to cost $23 million. We have a different funding model here. Mm-hmm. We share the funding with our local municipalities. So we already put right now $7.7 million into our SRO program. So we may have a head start because we currently have 166 SROs. What we're also concerned about with this bill, two things. One, it's one per school. Well, we have a high school with 4,800 students. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas has over 3,500 students.
Yeah.
One SRO is not enough to cover the grounds of that school. The second issue we have is that if we want the Guardian program, we want to have access to the $60 million in the Guardian program, and we would like our proportionate share so we can redirect those dollars back into SROs.
Let me remind
folks.
They're
not giving us that flexibility, and that's what upsets me. It's the Guardian program or nothing.
Understood.
We would rather use that money and purchase more SROs.
Robin, let me remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup, the statewide edition from Florida Public Radio.
All right, let's go to WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride. Lindsay, as we talk about all of this, it is April 20th. It is National School Walkout Day across the country. As students, not only do they honor the anniversary of the Columbine school shooting today, they're wearing orange, they're walking out of school. Not necessarily as much here in Florida where we saw all that happen several weeks ago. But this whole discussion is taking place in the context of this frankly, student-led movement around school safety in the larger framework of the gun debate in this country. So just wanted to make note of that and get your thoughts on that, too.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, you always have to remind yourself that with this bill, many of the students who were leading the movement didn't get what they wanted, which was, you know, assault weapons bans and things like that. And so with this, it's sort of a compromise in some ways for those students who, you know, were even at that shooting, who feel like, well, that these things aren't really what needs to be changed. This isn't the main issue. Some people think it's, you know, the gun regulations, which this bill does have things in it, like prohibiting bump stocks and then changing the purchase age of a gun from 18 to 21, things like that, which I think people were pretty happy with who were upset about, the regulations that are currently in place. And I think another thing is with the caller who called about nurses, a lot of people are saying that, you know, there are other things that are more important. And so one of the things is, you know, with this bill, a security risk assessment has to be made of all campuses. And then there's $99 million for school hardening. And the governor has said, you know, that money we're going to get to school districts as quickly as possible. But right now you need to make a security assessment and fund that up front if there are big issues at schools.
Just a few seconds till the break, Paula Wright, your final thoughts about that point.
The funding?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we certainly could use more money, but we have to comply and we have to have everything in place by August 1. So we are going to comply and provide the best possible safety measures for all of our students.
Well, thank you all so much for being with us as we discuss this compromise plan for school safety in Duval County. It's certainly an interesting way to look at this. Thanks to Lindsay Kilbride. She's a reporter here at WJCT. Duval County School Board member Paula Wright, Broward County School Board member Robin Bartleman, all with us to discuss this. A quick break in a moment. We'll talk about that Democratic gubernatorial debate in Florida here on the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition coming to you this Friday afternoon from Florida Public Radio. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, the statewide edition here in the Sunshine State. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. I'm in Miami today.
Melissa Rozhub in Jacksonville. The four major Democratic candidates for Florida governor, well, they had their first debate Wednesday in Tampa.
What we're definitely going to do is listen to the local communities.
We must want better for the people of Florida all across the state, a quality of life.
If you want to fire a weapon of war, you should join the military.
Perfect cannot be the enemy of the good.
The Democrats running to be the next governor here in the state of Florida. Former Miami Beach Mayor Phil Levine wants less testing for public school students, less money going to charter schools, although he wouldn't say or couldn't say how much the state spends on education. Former Congresswoman Gwen Graham said former President Barack Obama told her he was proud of her, even though she often voted against his policy proposals. The Tallahassee mayor, Andrew Gillum, touted his city's defiance of a state law banning local gun ordinances that are stricter than those in Florida law. And Winter Park entrepreneur Chris King billed himself as an outsider in the Democratic Party with new ideas and promised not to take money from the sugar industry.
So the Democrats debated all this time while the Republican candidates agreed to debate in late June. Current Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, he's running for governor. Now, he has raised more than $20 million for his campaign war chest. That's three times as much as his challenger, Congressman Ron DeSantis. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup as we discuss the governor's race and the recent Democratic debate, 305-995-1800. Right now, we're going to speak with William March. He is political correspondent for the Tampa Bay Times. William, thanks for being with us. So after this debate ended, was there a clear winner?
Well, that's obviously a pretty subjective question. I think after the debate, all four candidates sent out news releases, each one celebrating his or her own clear victory. I would probably pick two. First, I'll say that Chris King probably made up the most ground in the debate. That's at least partly because he had the most ground to make up. He's toward the back of the pack. But he sounded well-informed. He was the only one who knew the answer to that question about how much the state is spending on education. He pressed his attack on Gwen Graham, who's thought of by some as the front-runner. But you have to also mention Graham herself in here, who was able to press home one big advantage. She has a demographic advantage, being the only woman in the four-person race. She said it's Gwen versus the men.
And how did the women and the men in the audience respond to that?
Well, the audience was quiet, but I can tell you this. I believe that in a year like this, when the Democratic Party is counting on a surge of enthusiasm and energy, hoping for such a surge, and when they expect much of it to come from women, from the Me Too movement, angry mothers of public school kids, that advantage could be very significant for Gwen Graham.
William, let me ask you, was there a fifth candidate at all in the room? By that, I mean, frankly, the Trump administration and President Trump. We've seen other Democrats in other places here in Florida, but certainly in other kind of early races, special races and others, where it the Democrats tend to race against not each other, but against the administration.
Obviously bashing Donald Trump and also bashing outgoing Governor Rick Scott, who's known as an ally of Donald Trump, was a major thrust of this debate. Eventually, when the general election rolls around, the question is whether the Democratic nominee will be able to use the same weapon as effectively against Adam Putnam if he gets the Republican nomination. Ron DeSantis, who's also known as an ally of Trump, would be more vulnerable to that. But a lot of the conventional wisdom, the political insiders are saying that if the Democrats rely solely on attacking Trump as the basis of their campaign, they won't succeed.
How about Andrew Gillum? He has a lot of grassroots enthusiasm on the campaign trail, the Tallahassee mayor, the most progressive candidate in the primary field. He's also the lowest funded. And so you mentioned a moment ago, Gwen Graham seen as the front runner, but a lot of the race will turn on money. Mr. Levine has raised the most so far. So how do you see the fate of some of the candidates that aren't getting the big fundraising dollars in this crowded primary field like Andrew Gillum?
Well, Gillum and Chris King are both, of course, pretty far at the back of the pack, according to the early polls. Of course, the winner in all of those early polls is still undecided. So it's hard to come to a lot of strong conclusions based on that. Gillum is extremely well thought of by a small number of party activists. They view him, he's probably the most eloquent speaker among the four. Obviously, he's black. He appeals to an important Democratic Party constituency. I have heard people refer to him as Florida's Obama. But he had severe problems early in his campaign with a scandal within Tallahassee City Hall, where he is the mayor. He was not directly involved, but the problems occurred under his watch. And then ethical problems over use of a city email list for political purposes. Those things sort of staggered his campaign. He's had, as you mentioned, fundraising problems. He's way down at the bottom of the pack in fundraising. So his future is questionable, I guess.
William, let me ask you. This is April. The primary is in August, many, many months away. This is an awfully, arguably early Democratic debate. The Republicans just this week agreed for their first primary debate, not until late June. Who was the audience for this thing?
For the Democratic debate?
Yeah, and I don't mean necessarily the people in the room, but I mean, you know, who are the Florida Democrats trying to reach and trying to get motivated here?
Well, they are trying to reach the Democratic Party base, party activists, those who are eager and enthusiastic, people like the women in the Me Too movement, the people in the Indivisible movement, the people in the movements reacting to the Parkland shooting, also people who are and have been committed activists within the Democratic Party. That's who they're going after right now. That's who they're trying to appeal to.
And on the Republican side, it's interesting to watch the contest shaping up between former Congressman Ron DeSantis and Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. As we noted, Putnam right now is raising more than DeSantis. But if the Democrats are playing to their base, certainly Ron DeSantis is playing to the Republican primary base as he runs and positioning himself as more in tune with his base than Mr. Putnam. Would you agree?
Well, absolutely. Ron DeSantis, though, as you mentioned, he's raised, I think it's actually less than a third as much money as Adam Putnam, but DeSantis has gotten millions and millions of dollars worth of the main thing that money is there to buy, which in a political race, which is name recognition and face recognition. He's gotten that from repeated continual appearances on Fox News, the news vehicle of choice for the Republican Party base. So that kind of cuts the importance of Putnam's financial advantage. Now, there's likely to be, everyone's been assuming that there will be a third candidate joining the race soon, Richard Corcoran, who would probably, like DeSantis, also try to run to the right of Adam Putnam, possibly competing with DeSantis for the party's most conservative base. DeSantis' big advantage is, like I said, his appearances on Fox News and his alliance with Donald Trump, who's tweeted about DeSantis.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. As Tom pointed out, this debate was early in the going. William March, we have several more months to go in this governor's race and a lot more twists and turns.
Absolutely. I think all four of these candidates will go to the primary. The one who appeared
you
most
do.
In
you
danger,
don't think anybody's going to drop out between...
No, Tom, I don't. I think the one who was most in danger of that was Gillum, and he appears to have survived the early problems of his campaign. I think he'll stay in the race, if for no other reason, for the status and prestige within the party that it brings him to be running a statewide campaign. Chris King and Phil Levine both have the ability to self-fund, and Graham is the one who's been most successful in raising money other than her own money. So I think I would bet that we'll see all four of these candidates go to the primary.
William, let me ask you, there was one of the headlines that came out of this first Democratic debate for governor in Florida was how few of the candidates knew how much the state spent on education, and only one of the candidates could get the number right. I guess, first of all, is there much there to that type of question at this point? And if so, how much should we expect folks who are not directly involved in state government right now to know a dollar figure about how much the state spends on anything?
Well, Tom, I've got to say, I'm not terribly impressed with that kind of question. It really seems a lot like a gotcha question.
Yeah, I agree.
A more important question, in my view, would have been what the candidates think of the per pupil spending levels in Florida public education recently, which are more important in terms of what kind of service is able to be actually delivered to the students. Interestingly, though, one has to note Chris King, the only one who says he reads newspapers regularly, was also the only one who knew the answer.
Well, you know, I think that that alone, William, perhaps tells us a lot about where we're at in this campaign at this point. How many more debates for the Democrats that we know about?
I don't know of any at this point, Tom. Yeah. Maybe I'm uninformed. I'm sure there will be more before August rolls around. Interestingly, I think it's tomorrow night, all four of them will appear at a Democratic Party fundraising dinner in Tampa.
All right, that William March debate, of the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Gina Jordan and Kevin Mershart are our producers.
Jason Zabka is our technical director. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.